It's time for another episode of Stick a Fork in It. Guys, get ready for this one because we were just with Senator Janet Cruz, which I found the interview with her so enlightening. I don't know. What about you, Ev?
It's wild to hear so much history about a place I've lived most of my life, and she
Right.
remembers, generations ago. It's so cool.
And I think it reinforces that whole the authentic person and how their background, their experience really leads them into the direction of helping others, right? Using their experience to help others and improve their lives. And she was just amazing. But with her, we had Lorena Hardwick, who is our Chief External Affairs Officer at Feeding Tampa Bay and leads our advocacy work. Welcome back, Lorena, for kind of a part two, pivoting off of Senator Cruz's podcast.
Well, thank you, Shannon, and thank you, Ev. I always enjoy my time with both of you, and we definitely had a really nice time with Janet, and I'm so glad that you found it fulfilling because she definitely has so much of that Tampa history of, really how Tampa became who we are today as a city, with the amazing leaders like her and all the others that, have shaped our future growth.
So you kind of implied that you've known Senator Cruz for a really long time. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So, way back when I was very young, no, it was wonderful. So, Senator Cruz has been around, like you guys know, for a really long time. I was engaged with an organization called New Leaders Council, and she was one of the mentors, and I was paired up with her. And I remember my first meeting with her, we had lunch down in Palmasia. And she was just such a lovely person. And, she imparted on me again a little bit of that history of, being a Latina woman. I've said this before and I'll continue saying it. She is a force to be reckoned with when it comes to advocating for this community. At that time, we started talking about, what my future looked like, what I wanted to do, what were my aspirations. I had a very young daughter. So we connected on a lot of different, levels of being a mom, working in government, future goals of wanting to be able to be that voice for those that didn't have a voice.
So she is one of your mentors. Do you have other mentors? We often talk about how you're led into the path of what you succeed at, right? And your path, help us understand your path to policy and advocacy work and who might have helped you along the way with that.
Yeah, absolutely. With me, it's I come from the nonprofit sector. So starting back even in college, all of my wonderful opportunities that I had during the summer were with nonprofits and the nonprofit work that I did with students, with kids, through Boys and Girls Clubs, March of Dimes. And I know that the three of us, talked a little bit about that history on another podcast. But I have to say that sometimes mentors aren't people that you talk with every day, but they're just people that surround your sphere. And if you are in a position where you want to learn and you want to grow, it is so good and refreshing to be able to go to someone that's already doing that job and be able to have those conversations and ask the questions. So, if anything, I encourage everyone because we all can continue growing, we all can continue learning. So, I encourage anyone and everyone to, look at the things that are fulfilling in your life. How do you want to activate them? And then I am sure that in your circles or your friends' circles, there are people there that are doing the job. And having those really honest conversations can really be impactful. And I had the opportunity to have so many of those in college and post-college. I spent 15 years at the city of Tampa. And I will say that, watching Mayor Iorio be mayor and do the job, watching other women leaders in the nonprofit sector at that time. And Alex Sink, for example, when she was the CFO for the state of Florida, watching those women be in action was really inspiring. And I will say there are a couple of men in my life that have definitely provided support over the years, but one for sure is Santiago Corrada over at Visit Tampa Bay. I mean, he's usually my sounding board. We may go a few months without chatting, but I know that I can always pick up the phone and say, hey, can we have coffee? I've got something to, you know, run by you. And, you know, he's so supportive and always steers me in the right direction. It's usually the direction that I'm already going in.
But it's reinforcing that, right? He's reinforcing your ideas.
Yeah, it is. And sometimes it's, you know, it's something that I say to him, I'm like, you know, I'm not sure. And he goes, oh, come on. You know where you want to go with this. So let's talk that out.
That's okay. Sometimes we need that. And you mentioned the people in your circle, but, you know, I have reached out to folks I don't even know because I kind of honor their work and I'm impressed by things they do and I want to know. So, I mean, I actually encourage you if you want to go in any direction, you know, folks are pretty welcome on sharing their experience, their ideas and helping lift somebody up, right? Kind of like we do with food and connections at Feeding Tampa Bay. This is more of a personal thing. And so many people are willing to help with that. Lorena, you mentioned, you know, you have a daughter and we want to get into that, but tell us about like where you're from. Like, who are you? Where'd you grow up? How'd you grow up?
Who am I, Shannon?
Who are you? Besides fabulousness, but you know, Janet, we talked about, you know, she is really one of our OG Ybor City residents, which I found absolutely fascinating, especially in how that area has changed so much over the years. Where did you grow up and how did that influence you?
Yeah, so it's very rare to find a Tampanian, right? Like everyone in this city, this county seems to be from everywhere else. Well, I'm one of those that came here as a teen. I was born in Colombia, but I did not spend much time there. I grew up in Venezuela, but my formative years were spent in the Bronx. And that's just, it was such a wonderful experience growing up in the city. My uncle at the time lived in Chelsea, which is the neighborhood in Manhattan. And I spent a lot of weekends there, a lot of summers, spending time with him and visiting. And again, just growing up in New York is fascinating. We have access to so much culture that's around us. I mean, our field trips were going to the Met to watch an opera, going to the various museums, heading to the Bronx Zoo. So the amount of attractions and the accessibility of the cultural aspects that were provided to me by New York really formed who I am. And as you know, I've lived in Tampa now for over 30 years. So yes, this is home. But I will say that there is something about hopping on a plane and landing in LaGuardia Airport and just, I feel different. And I think it's just because it's, you know, I've considered it home for so long and it really just impacted me in such a wonderful way. To being, you know, it's funny, we talk about organizationally here at Feeding Tampa Bay, there's a word that some people have a love-hate relationship and it's called scrappy. But I feel like New York and growing up with a grandfather who was Puerto Rican, blended family. So he grew up with him. He's Puerto Rican. I grew up with the Puerto Rican culture. All of that made me scrappy. It made me the person that says, okay, so maybe this isn't the easiest path or the easiest thing to do, but how do we make it happen, right? And pulling into any and all the resources that I have at my disposal to try to make something happen. So I personally think scrappy is a great word. And I definitely identify as scrappy.
I love scrappy. You know, you mentioned, and I love it when people call us scrappy because we are. I mean, to me, that's like you get things done no matter what. That's scrappy to me. So it's like there's never a no and there's always a possibility. And that's what that means. I think to
Absolutely.
Me, and when we mentioned that, right? So you talked about the incredible cultural experiences you had growing up, living in the Bronx. And I have to tell you, it's what went in my head is Lorena from the block. You guys, I know.
Yes, there are a few friends that call me Lolo.
There you go.
There are a few friends that call me Lolo. So when Jennifer Lopez did her On the Six album, my train was the three. So it was Lolo on the three.
I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. And she certainly celebrates growing up in that area and attributes a lot of who she is to growing up there, right? So you talked about all the cultural amazing experiences that you had. I mean, the field trips, I don't know about you, Ev, but I wasn't going to the Met or the Bronx Zoo, although I love our Lowry Park Zoo. Tell us a little bit about your cultural influences with food. Like, what were some of those memories around the table growing up? Like, what was that household like?
Yes, and one of my favorite things to talk about, and I share this with my daughter, so she's very familiar, and we try to make it festive during the holidays, but my favorite memory, meaningful memory around a table was during Thanksgiving, and then it would just continue. It's like Thanksgiving kicked it all off, and it would continue through the holidays, through Christmas and New Year's, was we were a true community. Our neighbors, everyone would come over, you know, in preparation for Thanksgiving, and we would create these amazing dishes. And all the kids, right, everyone, no matter what age you were, you had a task around the table of helping create the meal. So pasteles puertorriqueños, deliciousness. They're made with green plantain is basically the dough that you make them with, green plantains. And again, it's just, you know, bringing everyone together around that table to make those, to create the big vats of arroz con gandules, the pork that, you know, we would start making those seasonings for the pork, squeezing those oranges, chopping the garlic, just deliciousness. And, but the most meaningful part was that we were all together.
All together.
And that is something that I see less and less of in our communities and in our families. And it's, you know, you can say one thing or another, right? Like we're evolving as families. But for me, it just really provided such a sense of community, of belonging, of stability. And of course, at the very end of the day, you know, it was the delicious food that then we got to share with all of our neighbors and the entire community that came together. So I would say that to this day, Thanksgiving is not Thanksgiving unless I have arroz con gandules and I have pasteles puertorriqueños, that it just like, it doesn't mean anything to me if that doesn't, you know, if that's
right?
Not there.
You have to have it.
I have to have it. And for Christmas, I make my own pernil. Once again, we have to have the pasteles and we have to have, the arroz, and also blending the other cultures, right? Like from Colombia. I literally just this past weekend went over to this cute little shop. It's on Columbus. It's called Antojitos. It's just the translation is small cravings. And I just purchased empanadas. I spent spring break in Colombia, in Bogota. My sister lives there. So I went to visit. And this was my daughter's first international trip. And we were just having the craving of, we were having empanadas pretty much every day. So I looked to her and we were out on the road and I said, we're going to go to Antojitos and get empanadas. And
he was like, yes, 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 yes. What's your favorite filling for an empanada?
Beef.
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 Ev, what's your favorite?
Probably chicken, but the guava ones are really good too.
I was going with the same. I was going to say, I love the chicken and, you know, that guava with cream cheese as a special treat every once in a while. Oh my gosh. So, so good. I love guava. It's so yummy.
Well, I want to say there's a distinct difference, which I honestly, it took me probably until like last year to realize this. I always just thought that the empanadas were corn-based. It's with the corn masa. Mm-hmm. And every time I would see like these flour-based empanadas, I'm like, what is this? Like, no, you have to have the corn. Well, apparently it's just a like Colombian, Venezuelan, and maybe some other South American countries that do it with the corn base, which for me, it's great since I'm a gluten-free person. I'm allergic to wheat. I mean, I enjoy them. I can eat, you know, 20 of them in one sitting. But it was so funny when someone was like, well, that's not the norm. I was like, what do you mean it's not the norm? Every empanada should be made of corn.
So that you just have to take us to that restaurant so we can experience the corn empanadas
Done.
Versus the flour. So I'm in and I'm down. Is that your favorite food? Do you have like a favorite food? Like when you're sitting and you're craving, I know it's kind of could be seasonal or situational, but do you have a food that you crave?
So The comfort food that I can do super quick and that I used to do all the time post college in my early 20s was rice, fry an egg and scramble it into the rice. And if I had some red beans or black beans, throw those in there. And when I was a kid, my grandfather used to always have the little Vienna sausages or spam on, in the house. And he would like cut those so thin. Well, the little Vienna sausages he'd fry. And he, cut the spam so thin. So I didn't have spam or Vienna sausages in my 20s. So I don't know. It was just nothing that something that I wouldn't think to buy, but I would always have bacon. So I'd like fry some bacon and then just like throw it in that. And that was my comfort food. I just would mix all those things together and that was it. I'd be so happy.
I love that. I kind of grew up, Ev, I don't know about you. You have to chime in with this because my mom did the not the Vienna sausages. I've never had them that way, but you would give them to babies as a finger food, right? Where they could do it themselves. So that's kind of how I grew up. My mother's family was Portuguese. So we did, she did this thin sliced spam, or you would get bologna, super thin sliced from the butcher, which we don't really have the butcher shops around like we used to. And it was such like a salty, I don't know, like really yum. Ev, did your mom ever do that or your family?
Well, my mom is Hungarian, and her mom was really big into like liverwurst when I was a kid, which sounds gross, but like I think when you grow up with it, we ate a lot of like bologna and liverwurst sandwiches, and like spam was big too. But I think it's one of those things like if you didn't have it young, you're like ew, but if you grew up with it, you're like that's great. Like you said, it's salty, it's mushy in a good way. It's hard to explain.
Yeah, it's like crispy out the out on the outside. I mean, it has to be prepared, right? But anyway, so I agree with your
We
comment.
digress on spam.
I know. Well, it's so funny because if you get one of our teammates, BJ, on this podcast, he's going to give you all kinds of downloads on the best flavored
Spam
spam,
recipes,
So
yeah, for
I just think it's
sure.
so interesting culturally what we have been introduced to because of our parents. Lorena, do you make that for your daughter?
Yeah, I have. And I've used hot dogs. Like I'll like slice the hot dog in half and then like fry it and I'll like chop it up. So I have done that for her in the past of the eggs and the rice and some hot dogs. And she's enjoyed it. So I'm sure, at some point when she's an adult, she'll be like, huh, that was an interesting combination.
And then she'll share it on. My kids didn't buy into mine. So I haven't, I tried a few times and they're like, so that didn't work. It didn't pass down to the next generation in my world. I was thinking about this past weekend and I thought I would ask you both this before we head into Feeding Tampa Bay topics. And Lorena, you help explain your role and what you see. But what can you say is the best part of your day? Lorena, you go first.
So honestly, it's getting up really early. Sometimes I fight it, but I'm up at 4:30 in the mornings and I'll peruse the news and I'll get ready and I'll go to the gym. And there are times where, yes, it is a little bit challenging, but I still do it because I know that when I'm done with my workout, I feel great and I'm like so happy that I was there. But that's like my time. That's the me time. That's the quiet time. The gym to me is therapeutic. I don't know that I necessarily think about anything while I'm at the gym. It's just, the repetitions and figuring out what workout I'm going to do. And it's just a very moment of zen. I have tried the whole meditation thing and that just doesn't work for me. So I look at working out as my meditation. I don't know if that sounds counterintuitive because, but for me, like my brain literally just goes blank and focuses on the exercise and what I'm doing at that moment and making sure that I'm counting, how many reps have I done? How many sets have I done? And it's fabulous.
I need that influence because that's not how I feel going to the gym. I would love that. I'd probably be in a much better shape. Ev, what about you? Best part of your day?
Well, my mind is also blank at 4:30 because I'm asleep until 8. But I think I'm definitely more of a night person. I really look forward to like the winding down at the end of the day. I always like I have like colored lights in my place and I put on candles and stuff and just, it's like you said about the morning, it's quiet, it's peaceful time. And I'll either be like reading or gaming or actually meditating recently. But yeah, just that kind of like settling down at the end of the day kind of thing.
Yeah, that's kind of my thing too. It's kind of like that time around the table, right? So in my house, we have, the kitchen bar, right? And most of the time, that's where we'll sit and have dinner. And it's a time where I can reflect on, we can talk about the good things of our day and what the challenges were, and maybe give advice to each other. And that, I think, is my favorite part of the day, is that time around the table that I see getting lost. Like you talk about generational influence with families and things like that. I see that because we're so busy, that getting lost, but we kind of keep that as, I look forward to that at my home. Even if we're going at a restaurant, it's kind of the same topics. How was your day? What was the best part? What was the challenging part? So I absolutely love that. And I'm hoping that my kids will pick that up. But, again, like not eating spam, they might not. So Lorena, you're a mom. We're segueing
Yes.
into motherhood. You're a mom, single mother, not, I'm sorry, motherhood, because I don't believe you're a single mother. I was a single mother at a, just briefly, and I know Senator Cruz was as well. Tell us about the challenges, and we already know the joys, but the challenges of being a mom and being so dedicated to your work.
I think time. I think we can, all look at that and lean into that. Time is a challenge. Just how many more minutes can you get out of the day? To your point, at the end of the day of connecting with my daughter, who's going to be 12 in a couple weeks, actually next week. And it's, like making sure that she had a, like understanding how was her day, what are the things that we need to accomplish tonight, before we get to bed. But I think some of the challenges, of course, is when they're younger, it gets easier as they get older and they become a little bit more independent. But definitely when she was younger, I wanted to ensure that I had the flexibility to always, be there, go to her school, volunteer her school, go to field trips. So I was very fortunate to be in a role that allowed me that flexibility. We worked hard, but we also had the opportunity to have those hours where if I needed to step away for 2 hours, it was, acceptable. And I knew that I was going to make that up because we had events on the weekends, or we had events in the evening. And this is, when I was with the councilman's office. So there was never a question of, my dedication or the time that I was putting into the job, because I was always there. But it was wonderful to be able during Ella's formative years to have that opportunity to build the relationships with the school and her teachers as well, that have now since carried now that she's in middle school, which has been really nice, to have had those relationships, and build those relationships early on that, I can continue to carry. And being here at Feeding Tampa Bay, it is such an amazing work environment filled with leaders that, care about the work that we do, but also care about us as employees and as humans, and allow us also those flexibilities, right? Emergencies pop up, especially as, our kids get older. For those of us that have children, things will happen. So knowing that I can, talk to a teammate and say, "Hey, I've got to run. I have to get this done," and have peace of mind is so special. And it's one of the things that when I was considering this role, it was something that I felt was very important to bring up, at the forefront, to say, work-life balance, flexibility. I am a mom, of a daughter. Sometimes, daughters require a little bit more attention than boys, from what I've learned from my boy mom friends.
True, true, true. I just like I grew up in a culture that wasn't always considered, right? Folks wanted your job was to be priority, and you had to figure out how to juggle your children. And I just kind of I appreciate how our cultures have changed, but like you said, especially at Feeding Tampa Bay, where leadership and everyone there are so thoughtful and understand that we each have our own lives. So outside of what we're dedicated to do with the at Feeding Tampa Bay. So tell me, I actually know a little bit about this because I was kind of sitting there when a certain person's phone rang. Tell us why Feeding Tampa Bay.
Well, Feeding Tampa Bay for so many different reasons. I mean, obviously I just, mentioned one, but for so many different reasons, it wasn't something that I was planning. you know, I wasn't saying, hey, I want to go work for Feeding Tampa Bay. It's just something that organically happened. I love government. I love working with local governments, with state governments, with our congressional level governments. I enjoy the opportunities to educate individuals on what's important in our community and what the needs of our community are. And I've done that in, you know, different capacities within different jobs in different service areas. So having that conversation with Thomas about, you know, the needs of Feeding Tampa Bay, the growth, the potential, the strategic plan that we are embarking on as an organization to be even more mindful that we already are with those that we are serving, with the, you know, with the community that really relies on us, not just for food, but for all of the other services that we provide, whether it's workforce training, whether it's our agency partners, whether it's someone that is, you know, really trying to make ends meet. And maybe we can say, hey, let's sit down, let's have this conversation. Do you qualify for SNAP? Let's figure it out and let's get you enrolled. So there are so many wonderful things that even though I had been in this community and I had volunteered in this warehouse and I had served at Trinity Cafe, I just was blown away with the amount of services that Feeding Tampa Bay offers and is engaged in community-wide. So it really spoke to me in the sense of, yes, it was going to be a shift in policy area that I would be coming into that I had no prior experience in, but my goodness, the amount of good that collectively we do and the potential growth of that was just outstanding. And I couldn't walk away. I thought this is going to be amazing. And I'm the type of person that I'm very flexible. I can pivot pretty quickly. And I wasn't too concerned with, you know, a lot of times people say, well, what does the team look like? What are the team dynamics? And just knowing this, you know, what this organization was doing and speaking to Thomas, I knew that I was going to walk into an amazing team. And I've been proven right. This is an amazing team. And I have been so happy and I'm so grateful and fortunate to have this opportunity and to be part of, you know, the group that in the next 5 years will really change the landscape of nonprofit work and food policy.
So tell us, when you're talking about policy, tell us what you've been working on and what you consider to be working on in the future with our government agencies, and who are they? You know, state, local, you were just in Washington, D.C. Help us understand your role in policy and how that works and how it will benefit our neighbors overall, which is really our goal at Feeding Tampa Bay.
Absolutely. And I'll give you a flavor from each of the various levels of government. For example, at the state level right now, or I'm sorry, at the local level right now, we have been working with a lot of our community partners, other nonprofits. Recently, Hillsborough County Commission is looking into the community investment tax. It has to be renewed every 30 years and it's up for renewal in 26. It requires for it to be on the ballot. So they will be placing that renewal on this year's ballot. And the community investment tax really funds a lot of the infrastructure projects that you see happening around the city and around the county. In addition, it provides funding for education system and helps them build their infrastructures, which means build schools, which means improvement to schools. So it's a very important tax. And it, you know, I'm proud of the County Commission for taking the initiative to start having these conversations now and doing what they can do to put it on the ballot. One of the issues that we've run across is that they are looking to remove education as a beneficiary. So along with our partners and chambers of commerce, we are having these conversations at the county level to say the infrastructures of our schools are very important. And it's not that they don't know that. It's just we have to come to some type of happy medium, right? Matt Spence on our team was there during public comment. I was in DC and I did public comment as I was in an Uber going on, getting to the Hill, which was kind of special because I had to ask the Uber driver to turn down the music so that I could speak. But that's the world I live in. It's, you know, it's always constantly moving, but that's, you know, just one example of an issue where we're rallying with our community and having these, you know, very challenging but important conversations at the county level. And I'll say at the state level, it's some of the same, right? We recently had a wonderful conversation with the Department of Children and Families and some of the advancements that they've had with their system, web-based system, produced a couple of challenges for us and for our neighbors and how, you know, we're able to enroll them and how they have access to specific benefits. But again, it's, you know, if you don't pick up the phone and, you know, ask or have the conversation or send a letter to initiate something, these issues will go unheard. And the only way that government knows and our elected officials or our governmental agencies know that something is wrong is when we go out there and use our voice to say, hey, guys, by the way, these are the challenges we're facing. And here, and it's not just here are the challenges, but here are opportunities on how we think this could work better or how we can collaborate with you and other governmental agencies and entities to create a better system or create a better process for us to be able to help our neighbors access, you know, give them more access to benefits. So that's, you know, that's just a one example at the state level. And then at the federal level, we have some really big legislation in the Farm Bill. Farm Bill is the legislation that really talks to farmers and how farmers get paid, you know, the different benefits that the farming community and the collaborations that the farming community has with entities like ours, like food banks. And it has all of the nutritional services fall under the Farm Bill. So things like the Supplemental Nutrition Program, SNAP, things like, well, WIC is outside of the Farm Bill, but, it, you know, there's still some funding partnerships along those lines. But everything nutrition that you can think of falls within the Farm Bill. And major legislation. We recently had a fully funded government. Appropriations for the last part of the appropriations bills were passed this past Friday. And, you know, I don't know whether the president has signed it yet, but it was sent to his desk. Bipartisan support. So we are now fully funded for a fiscal year 24 at the federal government. And now we can start focusing on these other major pieces of legislation that, again, are what gets funded, and those dollars come from the federal government, get passed through the state level, and then we're able to access them to provide the different nutritional programs that we have in the community. So whether that's more food through USDA, being able to have that funded at a higher level so that more nutritious, fresh produce comes to us from USDA, that's important. More dollars, or at least protecting the programs that already exist that help families, especially with young children, have supplemental dollars for fresh groceries. All of those things are, you know, kind of put together. And it's, again, it's important for us to be aware and for us to use our voice to advocate, to say these things are the building blocks of, you know, how we make it work down at the local levels. I know I just said a lot, but...
Well, and it helps explain a lot. And I think what's really important is folks taking the time to understand, right, what that means, right? So I appreciate you explaining all of those things at those different levels. My thought is too, and I know we're just working on this, how long you've been at FTB for 6 months, a little more?
Oh, gosh, you know what? I think I'm going to round a year in the end of May.
Yeah. Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
So with that, I know that we, right? And I know it's on us, you know, from public relations and communications team to get it out there that this is, you know, part of a work that we're committed to in advocacy. But How can folks help? I know we have many goals for the future on what that world might look like. I know it starts with understanding and making sure folks understand why this is so important. We're trying to support our neighbors who are struggling and bring health and capability to them. But how can folks help now? And how do you see them helping in the future?
Yeah, so I think being aware, right? Awareness is the first step, is being aware that there are things happening at all levels of government that not necessarily impact you. Yes, some things will impact us as individuals, but that impact the community that you live in. And your neighborhood, your community is only as good as your level of engagement in it. If you're not engaging in any way, shape, or form into your community, you have no idea what's going on around you. You don't know whether, there's people in need. You don't know whether there's a pothole that needs to be fixed. You don't know if there's roadway construction. So awareness is the number one thing, right? Not even Feeding Tampa Bay awareness, but just general awareness. And I think for, our plug for us for Feeding Tampa Bay is that I'm hopeful that everything that you just said, Shannon, as we are starting to flex our muscles, obviously this position that I'm in advocacy and policy work is a brand new position to this organization. So as the role grows and gets a little bit more established, there's a lot of establishing that was happening within this first year that I've been on board, right? It's, establishing what does our cadence look like at the local, state, and federal level? What are the things that are important to us? But as I just mentioned, community investment tax, you wouldn't say, oh, well, how does that impact you directly, Feeding Tampa Bay? Well, education impacts us directly. Mm-hmm. Ensuring that our children have the proper amount of schools so that it's not a crowded system. And we have a deep partnership with our education system. We have school pantries within our schools, 78 school pantries throughout the counties that we serve. So we have a vested interest. So although on the surface, you may think community investment tax, infrastructure, what does that have to do with food insecurity? It is so intertwined because it impacts the life of the children that we are here to serve in the community that we're serving. So being generally aware of, when there's a tax issue, when there is some other type of policy issue that could, impact the community that you live in is so important. And as we grow and as we grow our systems through comms, through marketing, through PR, you will start seeing more of us and you'll start seeing Feeding Tampa Bay speaking out more on all of the issues, right? Not just food, but all of the issues that can create an impact. And we want you to join. And the way that you will be able to join is we always will try to give you a snippet of here's the information, here's what's happening. And then if you so feel inclined, you can, click, read a little bit more about it, and then you can take action. There can be letters, there can be social media that you can be posting, there can be phone calls that you can be making to your legislators. So it really just all depends on the individual's level of awareness and then the individual's desire to actually take that next step and take it from just, okay, now I know that this is happening, and then moving you into, I know this is happening, this is important because of X, and lean on us to give you the resources of how you can make your voice heard. And we'll be able to do that for you as we move forward.
Right. And I think it's also great that you're via email, you're available for if someone wants to understand. First, you need to be aware, right, and know that you can help, but also understand. So if you have questions, for instance, we're talking about, taking care of our children, we want to make sure they have food so they can grow, learn, and play, but they need to be in a healthy environment. They need to be able to have the attention they deserve to thrive, which packing too many kids in a classroom is detrimental to their learning. So this work that you do, I'm so excited about it. I'm learning a lot from you already, and I didn't even realize. See, that's when you know you're having fun, that it's going to be a year soon. I had no idea. I've just been like going with the flow. I had no clue you've been here almost a year.
Well, when you said 6 months, I was like, wait, no, I definitely have been here more than 6 months.
I just, I think that proves it's something that I'm just enjoying. I'm not even counting the times because I've been learning so much and trying to understand, which I think you know, if we are wanting to take care, like you said, of our communities, we need to pay attention to a lot of things that I've been in this direction when I should have been moving wider, a wider scope of things and how we can definitely help our neighbors. So we have our website that we have currently, but really exciting this summer. It will be updated and it will be easier for people to navigate. Again, you can contact Lorena directly through email, which we'll definitely have in the description of the podcast here. But, you know, we're really thrilled to have you on board. You have been a huge asset to our leadership. You are definitely revered and loved on our team. And we're really excited. You know, we're getting to know you today a little bit about how people can get involved, but this is a voting year, yeah. Right? Yes. So we are going
elections
to have you
matter, back. People. Elections matter.
Exactly. And I, you know, you and I have had, you know, some private conversations about some dynamics on what voting and what your voice means and how you can best affect that. And we're going to have you join us back to share that information as we lead into a very important vote this fall. And there's always something that seems to be going on that we can use our voice to help support. So Lorena, thank you for joining us today on the tail end, of course, of having Senator Cruz, who is a wonderful friend of and mentor of yours. And we look forward to learning more as often as we can about our advocacy work and how we might be better for our community.
Thank you, Shannon. And thank you, Ev. And I will echo what you just said. Make sure to contact me if you have any questions and we'll get you working.
Well, we're going to see you again soon. And you guys, that's another episode is a wrap on Stick a Fork in It.
You can learn more about Feeding Tampa Bay and how to join the movement at feedingtampabay.org. You can also follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, YouTube, and TikTok at Feeding Tampa Bay.